Hey everyone, welcome to today's podcast. We're talking about willpower versus routine. Which one's better? I'll let you know, spoiler alert, it's the routine. You got to stop relying on willpower to try and lose weight because your brain is not designed to be willpower driven. Willpower is a prefrontal cortex process. It's something that takes a lot of energy to do, and you can use it up very quickly in a number of ways. It's not just restricting and controlling your eating. If you have to figure out how to get someplace you've never been to, if you had to do a math problem, all of these things use prefrontal cortex energy, and so it depletes pretty quickly. So we do not want to base all of your weight loss around having excessive willpower to try and force and control and oversee every single eating behavior you're going to make. Instead, we want to use that willpower to strategically create routines and rituals that we automatically do that keep us at our goal weight. So I hope this makes sense, because if you're going to always try and fight against yourself, you're going to lose. And instead, we want to train ourselves to be at the weight we want to be. And this shift in thinking makes all the difference in the world, because all of a sudden you start working with yourself rather than against yourself, which is how weight loss is felt. It's because you're trying to use your willpower to fight against your subconscious mind, to fight against your routines and your rituals. Right? I mean, snacking at night is the perfect example of this. That's a routine, and you're trying to willpower yourself to not do it. But instead, what we want to do is we want to use our willpower to create a new routine. Does this make sense? Because a lot of times when it comes to dieting, people are, it's almost like an anti-mindset where instead of trying to do something new, you're trying to stop yourself from doing the bad thing. And this approach is never going to work long term, because your brain is built to run on autopilot. You're going to do your routines on autopilot. Do you not notice this, right? Just like brushing your teeth. You do this multiple times a day. When you do it, you don't think about it. You just do it because it's part of your routine that runs automatically. And your eating is the same way. So instead of trying to fight against it, we want to use the willpower to create new routines that create the weight loss and ultimately allow you to live at your goal weight for the rest of your life on near autopilot. That's how you do that. So I hope this helps you out. If anyone has any questions, feel free to ask them. Any weight-related questions are acceptable, even if you're doing keto. Let me get my camera set up here. This camera looks crooked. That's definitely crooked. There we go. All right. There we go. All right. So, yeah, any weight loss questions, feel free to ask them. And ask them now, because I'll be gone in a couple days. See if any questions came through. All right, we're just getting started. So here we are, yeah. A rainy day here in New England. But what's up, Don? How's it going? Don and Callie. Did you guys get the eclipse? I feel like I saw that path of totality. But I don't think I got to California. But everyone could see the eclipse anyways, I believe, right? I'm eclipse crazy. but then I'm about to go to D.C. too, so I can't wait. Oh, a sunny day. Partial eclipse, yeah. I will tell you, not to be this guy, I don't know if I said this yesterday, I don't want to be this person, but the totality is exponentially better. So if you ever get a chance to actually put the extra work in to go see the totality, do it, because it's almost like they should be called different things. You know, one's an eclipse and one's like something called something else, you know, but it's so crazy. So Bree says, Thursdays are the most stressful day for me. Should that be my pleasure day since I'm prone to overeating? Oh, interesting. That's a good question. I never really thought about it that way. Would that be a good day? I suppose so. I hesitate because I'm kind of two minds, right? And of course, we're always figuring things out. So I don't know the right answer. I'll give you some ideas and you experiment with it and see what works for you. There's two ways to go about this. One is that you work on being more relaxed during Thursdays. Okay. Again, pleasure for me, like I like my pleasure days on the weekend because I like to really enjoy them. Right. So my weekends are more chill and relaxed. And I like using my busiest days. Those are the days I don't want to eat good foods. Now, you know, it's easier like on my busiest days where I'm working the hardest, I just want to fuel myself, you know, and then I like to keep my weekends where it's like more pleasure days where I'm kind of relaxed and more chill. Those are the days where I really enjoy the food the most. So that's kind of my first response. But again, there's no right or wrong. It's only what works for you. But the first thing I'd want to do is Thursdays are my most stressful day. I'd want to attack that. Of course, some days are more stressful than others, right? I mean, my Monday, Tuesday, Wednesdays are more stressful than my Saturday, Sundays. Okay. But that being said, my Monday, Tuesday, Wednesdays are typically not as stressful as they used to be because I've optimized them. So again, what I want to do, certainly both options at the same time. I want to optimize the stressful days and make it so that they're less stressful and I'm more able to handle those days the way I want to. And then the eating piece of it, test out the pleasure days. But I don't know, like again, I'm kind of struggling because I'm like, I don't know if I would really, how could I have the most pleasure out of the food when I'm most stressed? Do you know what I mean? So I'm kind of thinking that I would have trouble with that one. And so I would prefer to, in an ideal world, I would rather probably deal with the stressful days more effectively and partly using the pleasure days that I'm going to have when I'm more relaxed and calm, I can look forward to as motivation to get through the stressful days more effectively. So I guess that's where I'm kind of landing on. But again, it's up to you. Test them both out. But I think what you may find is if you're stressfully trying to eat pleasurably, I think you're going to overeat is what I think is going to happen. The days that I'm eating for pleasure are all the, you know, like Friday night kind of kicks it off and it's a relief. You know, the week's over and now it's like, okay, you know, and then Saturdays, I usually work a little bit on Saturdays, but it's a chill work, you know? And so when I'm eating for pleasure, I'm in a very calm, good mindset. And so if I try to eat for pleasure on days when I'm stressed out, I can't imagine that I wouldn't way overeat. So that's my big question there. So hope that helps out, but test it out and then get back to me with that. We could talk about that. I'm sure it was amazing. It was what I saw blew my mind. Yeah, it really blew my mind. I got to say, I was genuinely mind blown when I saw that eclipse happen. It was not what I expected. I expected it was going to be darkness. This is a totality, but what ended up happening, as soon as it kind of went over there, there was like a little flash of light and it was like, it was glowing silver. And I did not expect that. And the sky was kind of blue. It was cool. So that what an experience. I will remember that forever. Sarah says, I like that I don't have to think about food on my stressful weekdays. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, Sarah, that's, I feel exactly like Sarah does, Brie. I think about food more on my pleasure days. I find exactly the same thing. I find my stressful days I use to really, I'm just eating for fuel. You know what I mean? I'm just eating to most effectively get through the stressful days and get, do whatever it is I got to get done. And so I use kind of like the focus on whatever is making you stressed. I'm assuming it's work, but I use my focus on work and I put all my energy into focusing on work and I'm just eating what I eat to nourish myself so I can deal with the work, if that makes sense. And then when the pleasure days come, it really is like, I'm kind of, it's just a whole different mode and it's a more pleasurable day and it's more pleasurable eating. And I'm more in a position to kind of eat pleasurably in a moderated way. So yeah, I'm with Sarah on that. That's what I've learned works the best. But again, test it out and see what happens. There's no right or wrong. There's just kind of what works best for you. oh, thanks, Tabby. Spence86 says, need help with ignoring food noise. Okay, so I definitely have a new kind of take on the food noise thing. And, you know, the whole time, we never want to ignore stuff. You're not going to ignore shit, okay? You're not going to ignore food noise. If you're hungry, you're going to be hungry. There's ways to kind of deal with that hunger to some degree, but it's not going to last. This is a huge shift in it, with dieters and program yourself. Then one of the big differences is that we're not trying to ignore hunger. Dieters are always trying to, like, ironically, dieters really are, if you're honest, dieters are trying to be more hungry as they can be because they associate the hungrier I am, the faster the weight's going to come off. And don't tell me that's not true. And so in programming self, then we're not looking to ignore our hunger at all. We're looking to manage it. And so my answer is framed with that paradigm that I never want to ignore food noise. I want to manage it. And the easiest way to manage food noise, how does Ozempic manage food noise? It increases GLP-1 hormone, which your body naturally produces, your gut produces it, and it triggers satiety in yourself, right? It makes you less hungry, makes you feel more full from what you're eating. And so the Ozempic does it unnaturally, right? It increases the, you know, regardless of what you're eating, but you can increase it naturally too. And I did not realize that I had been taking nature's Ozempic for 5-6 years here when I started eating a big ass salad every weekday for lunch. Because when I started eating a giant salad for lunch, I could not believe how much my hunger reduced. I could not believe it. That's the biggest shift in my eating that I've ever experienced. I went from being a big hardcore meat eater to being a vegetarian. And honestly, that's second place to starting eating the salads that I started eating, because I increased my fiber intake 2-3 times when I did that. And that was shocking to me how much fuller I felt. And again, the more fiber you eat, fiber number one, you increase your fiber intake, you're going to feel more satisfied. The food noise is going to go down. And so Oprah's not going to tell you this. Apparently doctors will never tell you this, but if you eat natural fiber in the forms of fruits, vegetables, greens, beans, you're going to feel more satisfied. If you do it for a week or two, I guarantee you're going to feel more satisfied. I'm going to give you a guarantee, which I rarely do. Go check it out. So again, it's not ignoring food noise. You're never going to ignore food noise. Never, never, never. You're never going to ignore your hunger. You can do it. Like, I can give you techniques to do it temporarily, but a high level of hunger, you know what you're always going to end up doing? You're going to end up eating. Because when you feel hungry, every part of your body starts getting oriented towards food. And your senses too. You get really hungry, it's like you can see all the food in your line of sight. You can smell the cooking from the 5 streets over. You can hear people opening up potato chip bags, you know, 2 doors down. Forget about it. Like, you're just not going to ignore food noise or hunger. You've got to manage it strategically. And that's a much better strategy. So that helps you out. What's up, Laura? Listen to your daily. You're amazing. Thank you. Yes, I get your email sometimes. I apologize. I haven't gotten back to them. I've gotten flooded with email stuff. I'm horrible at email anyways. I will be honest. I'm not good at it. But anyways, thank you, Laura. I appreciate you saying that. I'm glad you watch. What's up, Joy? See you on there. Don says, and hunger is not an emergency. That's true, too. Slight hunger is not an emergency, but intense hunger feels like an emergency, folks. You know, when you're really hungry, it's setting off all the alarm bells in your body and mind. That's what I'm trying to say. You're not gonna fight against that and win. You don't believe me? Jody says, Jim, any lives next week? Enjoy your vacay. You deserve it. Thank you very much. Yeah, we'll have lives. I'll be back Wednesday. So yeah, we're going 4 days. I kind of like mini vacations at this point. We got dogs and kids and everyone's got so much stuff going on. Mini vacations seem to be kind of the strat for us. So it's kind of the perfect thing, you know? So yeah, we're going down to DC, which will be fun. I used to go to school down there, but it's gonna be fun. Don says, I always start with fiber. It's a huge help to feeling satisfied. Yeah, it's huge. It's huge. Fiber is nature's Ozempic. It's that simple. I don't know if I could say that. I might get banned, but it really is. Spencer, thank you for your help. You're welcome. You're welcome. What's up, Heather? I got home to an empty house yesterday and felt such joy and ate chips and then felt guilty. Yeah, that'll happen. That definitely happens where, you know, I told you, again, Heather, remember this. I got like a hair on here. It's driving me nuts. Oh, don't do that. Now it's focused on somewhere else. So, yeah, understanding our emotions is so crucial, this whole thing. And what triggers our behavior sometimes, and it's usually places, the environment, time of day, time of week, time of month, people or lack of people, right? In your case, right? All of a sudden it's like no one's there and it's exciting, it's party time, and moods, you know? So these are the big four triggers of behaviors. And so, yeah, I get it, Heather. Yeah, you felt such joy and then it becomes, I always dealt with that. Like all of a sudden you're home alone and it's like party time, you know, you just feel like a little kid again sometimes. I don't know what it was for me. So, yeah. But that's okay, Heather. Again, you redo it. You know what I mean? You redo it in your mind. How do you want to act when you get home alone? But again, it's an outlier event, I'm assuming, right? You rarely get home alone. And so remember this. We always want to focus on the 80, 90% of our eating that's habitual and consistent and not the outlier events. And I'm assuming, I think maybe it's kind of an outlier event that you get home and you're all alone. So I wouldn't worry too much about it, you know, if that's an unusual thing. If it's a regular thing, then you get working on it. Yeah, exactly. Yes. Redo, rehearse, and optimize. Exactly. And if that's an outlier thing, like rarely is that, you know, usually everyone's home, then I just let it go. Doesn't matter. You know, it's like I'll go out to DC. Well, the eclipse, actually. Eclipse is a good example of this. We went and got, like, you know, just it's a giant bag of snacks. like we were, well, we didn't know. We honestly, we were like, well, it could be so much traffic. It could take many, many hours to get home. It ended up not being, it was an 11-hour day, but we were thinking it could have been a 15, 16-hour day. So we got enough snacks and food to deal with that. But, you know, it's one day. I don't give a shit how I ate on the eclipse day. It happens once every 20 years. I'm not worried about it. You know what I'm saying? So we have to be strategic with what we focus on. And so if that's an outlier event that rarely happens, don't worry about it. Just let it go. It really doesn't mean much. What do you make for your dressing? Dressing I use, right now I'm using like a Ken's Simply Vinaigrette. So it's real simple. It's a couple ingredients, but it's Greek. It's the Greek dressing. I like Greek dressing. I use a locally made Greek dressing. The main things I'm looking for, again, I don't mind having dressing. I know, I think some people go so far with it. They're like, oh, I'm gonna have a salad. I can't ruin it. Put dressing on it. You ain't ruining shit. You know, unless you're literally drowning it in blue cheese. I live by the mindset that, an ounce or a tablespoon of sugar makes the medicine go down. Put some dressing on it, because the benefit overall of getting all that good stuff into your body far outweighs some of the calories from dressing, you know? And it's like, what did they say? That was like penny wise, pound foolish. People are like that with the weight, you know, it's like they'll eat a salad, a giant salad, then they'll worry about the dressing, but then they'll go and eat a burger and fries. You know what I mean? So it's just, you know, again, so whatever, when it comes to dressing, don't worry too much about it, especially if you like, you don't eat salads and you want to eat salads, but you want to have some dressing on it, great. And then once you get used to that, then you can start to cut the dressing down or replace it with something healthier. And so don't worry about that too much in the beginning. But then when you want to optimize the dressing, less ingredients, less bullshit in it is good. You know, so keep it that way. You know, obviously avoid the cream dressings, you know, that's something you want to move away from as you optimize it. Oil and vinegar is good, you know, more vinegar than oil if you really care. You know, so just those are some ideas. Faye says stress. I've been playing food dodgeball all week at the office, bagels and donuts everywhere, and dinner at Fogo de Chao. I survived, but oof, it was tough. Yeah, that's tough, right? Sometimes, yeah, being around food is a challenge. That is a real challenge, because so much of our hunger is based around what we see. Yeah. So for example, you know, if you have eaten cheesecake before, you could see a cheesecake just looking at it. You could see it in the window. And what'll happen is your body will start to release insulin in anticipation that you're going to eat the cheesecake. And so it knows it's going to spike your blood sugar. So you'll look at the cheesecake, your body will release insulin, and it'll lower your glucose level. So now you feel hungrier and a little tireder. And so, you know, just seeing food is a challenge, you know? And so I say this to you, you know, when you can deal with it, get the foods in your house and get them out of eyesight. Put them in the cabinets and the whatever. It is a little thing that can help you. And then when you are facing these things in the real life, it's a real challenge. So good job dealing with it. How do you deal with it? You know, if you do see foods, I will see them, and then I will say something to myself about it. You know, like, I don't know, I shouldn't have gone on that path, because I don't feel like explaining too deeply right now. But good job, Sarah. I know sometimes we get surrounded by these foods, and it is a challenge. It's real. That is real. But again, you know, kind of continuing what we have been talking about, one of the easiest ways to deal with food challenges of seeing food and not wanting to eat it is to be satisfied, to nourish yourself, you know, keep your hunger in check. That does a lot of the work of kind of setting you up for success when you are around these foods and do have to see it. Like fast food with a diet Coke. Yeah, exactly. It's like that. Brie, have you read Unfunk Your Gut? The author has a similar mindset and functional medicine approach. I have not read that. That sounds cool. I like that name. Unfunk Your Gut. Yeah, guts, man. I will say the gut knowledge is a little, I'm kind of just catching up with that. You know, I guts in general are, I think, for most people, a missing part of the process. Unfunk your gut. I'm just writing that down. I'll get that. Understanding your gut is really interesting. I will tell you, like studying the microbiome has been fascinating. I was talking in a coaching call about that. The more you understand it, I think all that stuff's so good. The more you understand your body, that's so helpful. You know, when you understand how your gut works, how, you know, blood glucose levels work, how insulin works, what your pancreas, you know, when you understand the system effects, like when you start thinking of your body as a system, it has very powerful impacts, because most people are completely disassociated from their body. Like for example, you don't think of like what you eat as being your primary exposure to the world. You think of your primary exposure to the world being your skin. But if you take your skin and iron it all out it's I forget the numbers now, but it's like, oh man, I'm gonna blank it all. I forget. I gotta relearn this. But you basically, don't hold me to these numbers exactly because I gotta relearn them. But if you took your skin and ironed it out, it's a couple, you know, square feet. Okay, and then second exposure to the world is your lungs, right? So if you took your nasal passage, your lungs, and you turn them inside out and iron them all out, it's like half the size of a tennis court. Okay, so that's the second biggest exposure to the world. The third biggest exposure to the world is your intestinal tract. So if you took your intestines and your stomach and your whole digestive system and you ironed it out, it's like the size of half a football field. So this is where I'm getting my numbers screwed up. I got to go recheck that. The point being that your primary exposure to the world is what you're putting it through your mouth. And a lot of times we don't think of it that way. So the more we start to understand this thing we're living in, and the more we start to turn our attention inside how the system's being affected by what the shit we're throwing in our mouth, the more we tend to make better choices, you know, because we're thinking about things in a different way. And a lot of people are disassociated from that and they just want to lose weight. And this is not unintentional. The diet industry has conditioned you to really just think about weight in terms of external, how you look. Think about it. Every weight loss ad you've ever seen is a before and after picture. You want to lose weight because you want to look better primarily. Let's be honest. And it ain't enough motivation. It's why you're not getting the results you want. But when you start to realize the real story is what's going on inside your body. I mean, think about it. This is what changed cigarette consumption. You know, people always knew, oh, it yellows my teeth, stains my fingers. Who gives a shit? Makes my breath smell bad. I don't care. You know, and it wasn't until we really realized that it gives you lung cancer and makes you die earlier than you need to. That's when people stopped smoking so many cigarettes. And the same thing has to happen with you and the weight, I believe, is you've got to internalize this as a, you know, this is your life. This is literally what you're putting in your mouth consistently is probably going to be the biggest thing that's going to impact how long you're alive for, your quality of life while you're alive. Now, that being dramatic, you just don't think of it that way, though. That's why you're not really motivated to lose weight, because you don't really value it. You know, imagine that. Imagine that the main reason most people aren't losing weight is because they don't really want to lose weight, because they're not really that motivated. So, yeah, it's a funny world, you know, but it's true. It's a true story. So, yeah, we got to change the way we think about things if we want different results. And changing the motivation is one of the keys. But, yeah, so I don't know. But let me kind of wrap this up. I got a lot of stuff to do in anticipation of getting out of here. As you go for a while, but yeah, I'm going to cut this one up. You're right on point. Thank you. Yeah, well, that looks like Nurse Anita. Are you a nurse, I'm assuming? Are you a nurse? I would say it's so funny. Majority of the people in my program at this point are nurses. So it's just so funny. Maybe that's why. Maybe they kind of internalize things. But yeah, right? So you know. And I mean, no one really talks about this. You know, even doctors, it's like, oh, you know, you should lose some weight. It's not too good for you. But you know, even doctors, my mom was diagnosed with type 2 diabetes, and I said, okay, will they explain to you what's going on? She's like, well, they said I should stop eating white foods. I said, oh my God, that's it? Because even diabetes, I find most people don't really understand what diabetes is. I know that's weird. I've talked to people that literally have type 2 diabetes that don't really understand what's going on. So I'll share this with you. I don't know if I'll get out of here, but I'll share this one because I think this is really important. Because I want to explain it to you in a functional way. Because again, you're always thinking of like these imaginary lines in your mind, becoming type 2 diabetic, becoming obese, having heart disease, having whatever things going on. But it's a process of, we bring ourselves there each and every time we do this. And so type 2 diabetes happens because you juice your pancreas, right? So long story short, you know, you eat a candy bar, let's say, right? Made with a lot of sugar that's quickly absorbed. It spikes your blood sugar level, right? So every cell in your body uses glucose. And so when you eat the candy bar, a lot of it's sugar, and the sugar is half glucose, half fructose. And the glucose goes right into your blood, spiking your blood sugar. Too much glucose in your blood concentrated is toxic. And so your body quickly releases lots of insulin. Now, what's interesting is your body's not good at measuring how much insulin release, because glucose spikes are not natural. Like, not really. I mean, you can do them. You can eat a lot of grapes or a lot of honey occasionally. But if I put you in the woods, you're gonna have a hard time spiking your glucose levels, okay? And so in a natural world, it's rare to spike our glucose levels because we can't eat foods that spike glucose. They don't exist. And so in the modern world, you can spike your glucose 5, 6, 7 times a day. And so every time you spike your glucose levels, you spike your insulin levels. Both of these are toxic at high levels. And so the insulin basically clears out the glucose from your blood. It's like a key that opens the cells and pushes the glucose into it. And then what happens is a lot of times, like I said, the glucose levels spike and then you release the insulin levels and it crashes the glucose levels. And guess what? Now you're hungry and tired again. And now you want to eat. And so you get caught in this merry-go-round, not merry-go-round, this roller coaster of spiking your glucose, spiking it, crashing it. And you always feel hungry and full, starving and full. And eventually what happens is when you keep doing this over and over again, the cells become resistant to the insulin. Right, so insulin resistance is that, you know, your cells have gotten resistant to this constant roller coaster of glucose, insulin, open the door, shuttle it in there, and eventually the key gets kind of worn. And now also your pancreas can't produce as much insulin because it's produced so much of it. And this is one of the things that the Ozempic does. It helps your pancreas produce more insulin. Which again is another reason why for type 2 diabetics, even the Ozempic is a way to treat the symptom, not the core problem. You know, the core problem isn't that your pancreas isn't producing enough insulin. It's that you keep juicing your glucose levels and needing to produce more insulin. So the real answer is to start stabilizing your glucose intake so it's more even keel. And how do you do that? Well, you eat more natural foods. The more natural, healthy foods you eat, the more it's a slow release of glucose. Slow release of glucose, slow release of insulin. And that's much better for your body. And so, again, when you start to understand the instant impacts of your food decisions, it starts to change things a bit. Because a lot of people say, well, who gives a shit if I eat a candy bar? I'm fine. I'm pre-diabetic. I'm not even diabetic. Who cares? You know? But yeah, but every time you eat that candy bar, you're creating the tsunami effect of glucose and insulin in your body. And it has this systematic negative effect on your body, mind, emotion, and moods, and your weight. Every time you do it. So, you know, it's an interesting way to think about it, right? And that's probably not how you thought about it, you know, most likely. We eat when we can and often not well, trying to improve that. Yeah, nurses for sure. Yeah, that's the biggest challenge, right? Of being a nurse is that your schedule is seemingly very sporadic. Now, again, working with nurses, you can do this much better. It's the same answer for everyone. It's you got to structure your eating. I believe this to my core. I believe you got to structure your eating, which is one of the main things we do in the Program Yourself Thin course is you create your eating blueprint, which is a structured way of eating. So even when you, again, as a nurse, yes, your schedule is kind of all over the place, but you can absolutely still structure your eating. I promise you. And once you structure it, yeah, it changes everything. You know, you feel a lot better. Laura says, can insulin resistant be reversed? Can you lose weight if you have this? I believe I do. Yes, you can absolutely, you can lose weight no matter what. You can have, there's no condition I've seen. There's a couple real outlier conditions that you don't have or you'd know about them. Insulin resistance, Hashimoto's, menopause, hormonal issues, thyroid issues. All of these things definitely are real and they can slow down your weight loss. But if you reduce your calories over time, you're going to lose weight. And so even if you're insulin resistant, so can insulin resistance be reversed? Yeah, to a point. Okay. So it's somewhat of a pickling process, folks. So I tell you this in the hopes that you realize that sometimes you can't reverse things. So I know a lot of us, we're walking around thinking, oh, I get type 2 diabetes. I just take insulin. Man, you're not internalizing how damaging it is to your body to spike your blood sugar like that, to have diabetes. It's an intense thing, you know, and our culture minimizes it. Listen, again, there isn't anything, there's an obesity conspiracy. It's the food companies, the diet companies, they're one and the same. The food companies own the diet companies, by the way. I'm not going to say it. Okay, I'll say it. Weight Watchers was owned by Heinz. Jenny Craig was owned by Nestle. Atkins Food Products owned by the same company owns Carvel Ice Cream and Cinnabon. And Slim Fast was owned by the same company owns Ben & Jerry's Ice Cream. Those companies don't want you to lose weight. So the obesity conspiracy is the food companies, the diet companies, and the medical establishment. I love my doctors and nurses, but the system itself is really built to treat the symptoms. And all the profits from the medical establishment pretty much come from treating symptoms, not finding cures. And so, you know, part of how that filters down to you and your brain is that you minimize the effects of type 2 diabetes, of spiking your blood glucose, because in the back of your mind, like, oh, just treat it with medicine, you know, but you're not really understanding what it does to you and what the impacts of being on these medicines are and the other effects of it are. And once you start paying attention to it, you know, it can become a very powerful motivator. Chris says, is fasting as a woman recommended? I don't know what kind of fast you mean. You know, there's intermittent fasting, there's water fast, there's long-term fasting. So it depends on the type of fasting you're talking about. Whether it's recommended or not, really, I think comes down to, oh, intermittent fasting. You know, listen, intermittent fasting is just another tactic to reduce your calorie consumption by compressing your eating window to 8 hours. And there's no magic to intermittent fasting. That being said, I intermittent fast, so I want to make clear about that. But I started doing this 30 years ago, and I kind of came into it on my own. And the reason I make that distinction is that when people approach intermittent fasting now, it's like a diet. And so they're jumping right into not eating 16 hours a day every day, you know, or whatever their strategy can be. Long story short, it's usually very overwhelming for them. And then they feel like a failure that they can't do it. And or I see a lot of people trying to intermittent fast and they're really forcing themselves to do it, but they're starving. And when they finally start eating, they're binging. And so I've absolutely seen intermittent fasting becoming a training ground, become a binge eater as well. So, you know, is it good? Yes. Is it bad? Yes. It's both. And it just depends on how you approach it and how you respond to it. So again, I can't give you just a simple answer because I don't know enough about you. I don't know if you've tried it before and I don't know what your experience with it is. But I say it to you that there's a million ways to lose weight. Find the way that works best for you. And for a lot of people, intermittent fasting is not that thing. And for some people it is, you know? So if it is, great. But if it's not, you don't force yourself to do it. The big thing I see over and over again with weight loss is that the easiest way to describe it is it's people trying to fit a square peg into a round hole, trying to force yourself to do something you don't want to do. And you don't need to do that. And it's counterproductive. The more you're forcing yourself to do something, the less effective it's going to be. So that's my long-winded answer to it. I intermittent fast and I help nighttime snacking. I've been doing this 8 months now and I love it. Yeah, I now on the positive side of intermittent fasting, I do think when you speak within the context of the American diet, which is basically eating all day long, I think it's wonderful because I don't think it's not normal for your body. It's not normal to be eating all day long. We've never done that in the history of our history. We've never done that. And so it's overwhelming. So I think creating windows where you're not eating is wonderful. I use a phrase, and I've used this since I started doing it, called nighttime fasting. And basically what it was is when I went to bed and when I stopped eating, I worked on making that bigger and bigger, that window. And I gradually worked it up until now. I usually stop eating 6-7 o'clock at night and I eat the next day 7-8 o'clock in the morning. Okay. And it feels great. I love it. It's improved my sleep. I feel amazing. So I love all that stuff. But I think they've been fasting again because very dogmatic. And I think that creates all kind of problems. So again, I like intermittent fasting, but I would say approach it with a more flexible mindset than what you're going to get when you go and study it, because you tend to get very rigid rules and prescriptions. So, excuse me. Kay says, are low-fat diets less than 50 grams per day, less than 15% of your daily calories, bad for hormones in the long term? I mean, it depends. You know what I mean? It really depends. And I really mean that because, you know, what we're finding, we're just beginning to enter the age of individualized medicine. And we're only able to get there because of genetic testing. And so genetic testing is really a paradigm shift within the medical industry where they're really understanding, you know, it's like, think about, right? Imagine, I always think back, this is a crazy thing. Like, I don't know, 500 years, I don't know when they discovered different blood types, but it's crazy to think like, who the hell would have thought that, right? Who would have thought with different blood types, you know? And so a lot of history kind of reveals this, right? We're just like, oh, we're all the same, you know? Oh no, we all have different types of blood. And now the genetic thing is that times a million, that we're all different. And that difference shows up in our digestion. So for example, lactose intolerance, you know, 100% of Asians are lactose intolerant. Over 75% of African-Americans are lactose intolerant. So, you know, again, that's just one example of our genetics impact the foods we can eat and thrive with and suffer with. So I would never say low-fat diets across the board because it depends, you know. If you're if you got like, I don't know, Eskimo genetics in you, you may be able to handle fat a lot differently than someone who has different genetics. Do you know what I mean? So again, I know this leads to very unsatisfying answers, but I think we have to realize we live in the gray zone. There's no clear cut one size fits all answers for this stuff. And so what I would suggest is, you know, you can play around. So why eat low fat diets? I think I'm in the camp of lowering fat. I have been that way for 30 years. Now that was more of a fad then, you know what I mean? But I think that holds up. I think we consume excessive amounts of fat than we would in nature. That's my belief. And so I think just in the standard American diet is very high in fat. And so I don't like to get into specific prescription numbers, but I like to think like, I personally keep my fat intake pretty low. I feel best doing that, but it's been trial and error. That's the point I want to leave you with, is that experiment with it, lower your fat intake and see how you feel, you know, because it really is unique. And so again, what we're looking for is not like some plan I tell you, and then you try and force yourself to do it, but okay, I learned about low fat. Let me experiment with it and see how I feel. And not just how I lose weight, not just that, but how do I feel about it? Do I feel good? Do I feel alive? Do I feel energized? Or do I feel lethargic and frustrated and annoyed with it? So pay attention to how you feel with it, because that's going to dictate how long you do it for, which is going to dictate the ultimate results you get from it. So I hope that makes sense. But again, remember, the thing with fat is that fat is where fat contains the most calories. So when it comes to fat, the way I think of fat is I think of calorie density. And so like, calorie density is the amount of calories in a volume of food. And so a tablespoon of oil will have as much calories as like a watermelon. I'm making this up, but you get what I'm saying. So the watermelon's not calorie dense, and the oil is calorie dense, right? Because it's this big, one tablespoon, but it's packed full of calories. Okay. And so in general, fat has a lot of calories. Fat's calorie dense. Okay. And so, have I heard of Dr. Greger? I love Dr. Greger. He wrote the book that really was my second renaissance of nutrition. I was just talking about this earlier. I don't feel like you're here, but when I talk about the two biggest shifts in my diet, we're going from a big, big meat eater. Well, I should say there's three shifts in my diet. Two of them happen kind of similar, so I lump them together. But I ate a very processed food diet, very meat heavy diet, and I shifted over to more natural food, vegetarian. That was the first giant shift in my diet. The second giant shift, which may have been even bigger, is when I was still a vegetarian, but I started adding way more fiber, nutrient density, and nutrient variety into my diet. And that was directly because of Dr. Greger's book, How Not to Die, which I consider, that's probably my number one nutrition book of all time. That really had a huge impact on me. I'm a giant fan of his. So yes, I am familiar with him. And again, he says what a lot of people say. Yep, yeah, exactly. Yeah, all the people you're saying, and Dr. Ornish, you know, all of them are, I'm in that camp. So I know, you know, again, I say this every day, that we live in the information age, which doesn't mean we have access to like one thing we know is true. It means we have access to all of the information, and we can believe whatever we want because there's people that have the criteria to believe them. Doctors telling you to just eat meat. Doctors telling you don't worry about cholesterol. So, you know, we can believe anything we want to believe at this point in time. And I throw myself 1000% into Dr. Greger, Neil Bernard, Dr. Ornish. I believe these people, you know. What to do if I can't live without meat and chicken? I think that's fine. I'm not anti meat chicken. You know, I will tell you, you know, a big part of why I shifted away from meat, and I say this all the time, for me, honestly, my being a vegetarian felt like my sexuality. And I believe you're born, you know, with your sexuality. And I believe, like, once, because I was a big ass meat eater. I mean, there weren't people eating a lot more meat than me. I ate meat at least twice a day my entire life. And so, but when I started going down this path and vegetarian just kind of popped its head up, I was like, it just felt right. And so I very easily went into it. It wasn't a struggle for me. I didn't force myself to do it. One of the big reasons I did it, I'll kind of list them in order. One of the big ones, honestly, is I was like, I did believe it was healthier, but But I thought it was going to help me manage my weight a lot better, because you got to remember, this was 30 years ago. And back then, there really wasn't any meat substitute that was any good. Okay. So it's like, if I stopped, because I looked at what I ate, what I struggled with, it was a lot of fast food, junk food, meat-based dishes. And so, like, meatball grinders, you know, I love meatball grinders. And so it's like shifting away from meat, I was like, man, that's going to make it way easier to manage my weight, because all the most calorie dense foods that I'm eating have all meat in them, you know? So that was part of it. You know, part of it's ethical, you know, but a lot of it was health. And I will share this with you, take it or leave it. But I'm not sitting here. Program yourself in as diet agnostic. I work with people that have all sorts of philosophies, carnivores, vegans, anyone, people that want to do keto, you know, I'll even support them. So what I will say though, is when you think about your meat and chicken, is a big part of why I shifted away from meat was I did not believe in farming. So I will share this part, because I'm not being dogmatic with this. I think I'm just being obvious, and it's something you just don't think about. But what they do now to, you know, the livestock industry has become an absolute, it's just a money, it's all money, you know? So they optimize the tactics they use, the animals they're giving to you, it's all based around money, not nutrition. So you're taking animals, cows that live off of grass, chickens that live off of pecking around in the natural world. And what animals used to be is nutrient aggregators. Okay, so you get a deer has, I don't know, 100 square miles, it's roaming, and it's eating all different nutrients all over the place, a natural diet. And its body takes that natural diet and turns it into animal meat, protein. And so eating a natural animal that lived a natural diet in its natural environment, I think is very healthy. I truly do. I think meat is a healthy thing when it's raised that way. And I think the meat now overwhelmingly is raised in feedlots, not its natural environment. It's a very stressful environment. It's not eating its natural diet. Okay. Like a lot of times with cows, they're feeding them corn. They ain't eating corn in the natural world, you know? And so what happens is they're these stressful environments that aren't natural. They're eating not natural diets, and they get sick. And so they have to give them lots of antibiotics to deal with the diseases they get. And then you get that food. And so it's not optimized for nutrition. And I think it has a lot of negative impacts personally. You're ingesting all these antibiotics. They don't matter to you. You don't absorb them at all. You know, what quality of meat are you getting? And so I don't want to get too deep into it. That's up for you to decide. I just want to kind of open the door. And if you're serious, you know, because I know you feel like you can't live without meat or chicken. And I'm not telling you to stop eating that. But what I'm saying is look into what you're eating, if you care. You know, most people don't care, so I don't expect you to do it, because most people don't give a shit what they eat. I do. You know, this is why I eat salmon. I don't eat farmed salmon. I have never eaten farmed salmon. It looks fucking disgusting. It's a weird color pink because it's not natural. You know, they live in high concentrations of shit. I read that yesterday, that the chickens, they feed them back their own chicken shit. So, you know, again, you have to understand that all the meat is built on an economic model, not a nutrition model. They're not trying to make you healthy. They're trying to make money. And the most money you make is by making genetically engineered, who gives a shit about nutrition? They don't care at all. And so it's all about money. And so there's a low level of nutrition in a lot of conventional meat. Does anyone argue with that? I mean, does anyone have a response that's bullshit or that's not true? I'm just being sensitive. So I don't know, you know, everyone gets to look at things how they want to look at it, but it's like one of those things that's right in front of you that no one sees. You know, because it's so, again, it goes back to the big lie, right? People believe the big lie more than they believe the small lie. And the big lie is this food production thing, you know? So this isn't even the ethical thing. I mean, the ethical thing matters to me a bit as well, but it really is more, what am I putting in my body? You know, I'm putting these Franken animals that are fed this Franken diet that's unnatural. It's unnatural. So if you're talking to me about, like, you know, pasture-raised chickens, I just read a whole book on this. It was called "Real Fake Food, Real Food," but they were talking about even the chickens. So I'll give you. I'm kind of on a roll now. So here I go. But they had a contest this was over 100 years ago, they had a national contest in America for the fastest growing chicken. They wanted to find the fastest growing chicken because that's all about money. And it's all about, like, you know, if you look into the meat industry, what you'll notice is it's all run by accountants, and they're looking for how long it takes to go from birth to meat. That's what everything is. And so they're always genetically so initially it was breeding optimizing. And so they had this contest, which chicken grows the fastest. And they picked that chicken, won the competition. And that becomes the chicken that everyone's eating now for 100 years. And so the point of his book was, you're not even eating like real chickens anymore. They're Franken chickens, and it doesn't taste like a real chicken tastes because it doesn't have the genetics of it. And primarily it's not eating the diet that a real chicken eats. And so I forget the name of the chicken he talked about, but there was some special chicken that kind of micro farms make now, which it's a specific breed that's really tasty, and it grows slower, and it eats natural diets. And I forget if it's a crest, I'm blanking on it. Fallen, I'm gonna look it up. Let me look it up real quick. I'll tell you the name of it. I'll look up tasty chicken. I know that won't come up. Chicken breed. Let me see if I can get, I bet it comes up. I'm missing it. But I'm getting different breeds anyways, but. Oh, it was called Fallen Rock. Like, I feel like it was called Fallen Rock. Let me look that up. Who gives a shit? I think it was Fallen Rock, though. Some sort of rock. Who cares, right? Okay, that's not a rabbit hole of whatever. But anyway, so this type of chicken, so you're getting the same type of chicken, you're getting the same type of cow, you know? And so, you know, even the cows, I'm like, Jesus Christ. I mean, like, when in history we're just living off of cows? Like, you know what I mean? Like it's just weird to pick that one animal. Why do we pick that one animal? Well, you know, probably because it's giant and they're easy to make, you know, but whatever. So you're not getting the nutrient density and variety that your body truly craves. You're not getting the micronutrients it gets. Now, again, if these animals were living out in the wild world, eating all different things, then there are nutrient dense. So again, grass-fed, you know, pasture-raised chickens is way better than this stuff. I eat what's it called? I'm blanking on this. The salmon I eat. Sockeye. I eat sockeye salmon, which is wild caught in Alaska. So it's a wild fish out in the wild world, as opposed to a farm-raised salmon. Because you don't go look at the farming conditions. Again, I'm trying to be some crazy person here, but do you have any, if you're eating meat every day, go look at where the food's being made and then see you know what I mean? Like it's a chain reaction to what you're putting in your body and why you feel the way you feel. So never mind losing weight, you know, you're putting this trash into your body. And even the chickens, you know, like they're so tasteless now that what they do is they brine bathe them. They drop them in a brine bath to give them some flavor, you know, because they don't have any flavor anymore. But anyways, that was a great book, actually, that I read. How many calories do you consume daily? I don't know, actually. I've never tracked my calories. I prefer a more intuitive approach. Bard Rock. Yes, thank you. Christ. Bard Rock, that's it. That's the Bard Rock chicken. So go look that up and then go eat one. And that was the story. You know, he goes, not only did they eat the Bard Rock chicken, it's smaller, of course, right? And the point he was making, and I can't tell if this is true or not, but he goes, I ate the Bard Rock chicken, which was smaller. He goes, but I would eat it and I felt way more satisfied. The reason you're not satisfied, you can eat all the chicken sandwiches in the world, is you're not getting the micronutrients you need. Think about this, right? If you don't get the calories you need, your body sends you a hunger signal. If you don't get the micronutrients you need, your body sends you a hunger signal. If you're wondering why you're hungry all the time, it's because you're not getting the micronutrients your body needs. I know you're not. I work on this for 30 years and I struggle with it. So, but anyways, yeah, back to the calories. Yeah, I don't really count calories. What I've done is I structure my eating and then I see what my weight is. And then I would systematically cut, in my mind, I have a sense of calories. And so it's like I would eat a certain way, see where my weight ends up, and then I would strategically say, where's the easiest place for me to cut some calories out? I'd cut those calories out, do that for a little while, see where my weight's at. So that's kind of how I've approached it. It's a much more intuitive approach. I don't want to confuse that with intuitive eating, because I think intuitive eating, the way most people think of it, is a complete horseshit. You're never going to intuitive eat yourself. The way people think of intuitive, I know how most people define it, that's never going to work for you, I bet. So prove me wrong, but I don't think it's going to work for you. But I do have an intuitive approach, if that makes sense, to master my eating. And it's not counting calories, because counting calories is usually a short term strategy that does not last long. Yeah, Don says, I also no longer count a thing and still lose weight monthly. Yeah, freedom. Yeah, absolutely. You can absolutely lose weight without counting calories. No doubt about it. Jordan says, I struggle to eat and I'm losing weight. Would you recommend smaller meals throughout the day? I struggle to eat. What are you struggling to eat? I don't know what that means. And am losing weight. You're struggling to eat less and I'm losing weight? Would you recommend smaller meals throughout the day? Do you put protein in your salad? Yes, I usually either put chickpeas or egg whites, hard-boiled egg whites. And sometimes, I guess, a little bit of protein, blue cheese crumbles, sometimes a little bit. And some walnuts, a little bit of protein in there. You don't eat as much protein as y'all think, I will tell you that. Protein's over-exaggerated in this culture because, back to the money, there's a lot of money made off of selling you meat. And so the protein thing, the protein scare is such bullshit. And I'll just prove it to you in one simple question. When's the last time you got a protein deficiency test? Ever? Everyone's worried about protein, right? I'm a vegetarian. I let my doctor know that they ever give me a protein deficiency test. Nope. Nope. You ever gotten one? Probably not. So the protein fears are overblown. Now, protein's important. I'm not saying it's not important. It is important, but people over-index on the protein piece. And they under-index on the fiber. Fiber is the number one thing. If you start eating more of it, you'll lose weight easily and naturally. Try tofu or tempeh as a protein source. They're absolutely delicious. Yep. Yeah, I eat both of those. And they are. Yeah, tofu just tastes like whatever it's with. I love tofu and I love tempeh. So I like both of those. They're very good. All right, everyone, I'm going to get out of here. Got a lot of stuff to do. So, all right, thank you so much. If you're not in my world, make sure that you go to my bio, click the link, get the hypnosis session, watch the video I made for you, read the emails, and listen to the podcast. Podcast is Program Yourself Then on all the platforms. And if you're really serious, go to Program Yourself Then, start the program, and work with me. All right, everyone, have a super-duper day, and we will talk soon. Bye, everyone.